Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. Where we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go! Turn it up!
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
And this is episode 288. We are live and living color. Getting funky like a monkey, if you will. This is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, ladies and gentlemen. I am Chris Featherstone, as always. Join us, Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling, and follow us on Twitter at Crave Wrestling. So I have a really fun and interesting guest on the show tonight, former WWE referee. I'm really, really excited about this interview. I've had referees on the show before. And very established referees, and this one is one of the longest tenured WWE referees of all time, and I'm really excited to have this person on the show tonight. I was doing counting of the show. The show is about 5.5 years old actually now, and I think I was counting. I wasn't finished, but I think I was at like 96 or 97. As far as guests I had on the show. So I think this person is like number 97 or 98. I have to count exactly. It's a lot of guests and a lot of former and current WWE, ROH, New Japan, NWA, Impact Wrestling. We've had a lot of people on the show. And this person almost made 100, but was able to become one of the first 100 guests. he has that accolade, I guess you could say. And I'm really, really excited to have him on the show, full of questions, full of experience, full of expertise in the WWE ring. The third wheel, ladies and gentlemen, and a lot of times the third wheel is the one to hold it all together. Without further ado, former WWE referee Jack Doan, how are you tonight, sir?
How are you doing? Good. Thanks for having me.
I'm doing well, doing very well. It's great to have you on the show tonight.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So you were in WWE for 22 years?
Yeah, 22 years. Yep.
Wow, that is an insanely long time. Absolutely.
Yeah,
A lot of time spent. Yes. Do you know, as far as ballpark, do you know how many matches you've reffed in the WWE?
Oh, man. I tried to figure it out one time, and someone thought I was crazy. They're like, no way. I said, you know, they don't understand when we do live events, not just television. You know, I was doing, well, especially back when I first started out, where we were doing double shots on Saturday, double shots on Sunday. You know, we would run sometimes 20 days straight, show every night.
Wow.
You know, back years ago when we were, when I first started in, when we were doing high school gymnasiums, a lot of colleges, and, you know, the business was kind of at a down point. But I would figure, man, it's in the tens of thousands. And someone said, oh, no way. I said, well, I was doing four matches a night, times, you know, 16, 18 shows a month. So that, you know, times that by 22 years, it adds up.
And sure.
Of course, I had a few years out with, I had end up with four shoulder surgeries over my time with them. So that, you know, the rehab, the therapy for shoulder surgeries takes quite a while. So I missed some time in the ring. But.
Now, the shoulder surgeries came from, did it come from actually being involved in angles with wrestlers?
The first one was just the weirdest thing. We were actually overseas, Portugal, I think. And I slid in and I was, you know, people don't understand the physicality of wrestling, and even us as referees, you know, that how would you get hurt? Well, when your guy does a quick pin, false finish, and you're sliding in there to count, I mean, you know, we're not falling down like a tree and, you know, take your time. You get right down in there. You make that quick count to make it look good. Well, I slid down one time, and all your weight goes, for me, I'm right-handed, all the weight goes on my left shoulder, and I popped my shoulder out, dislocated it, and then when I got flown back to the States, I ended up finding out I tore my rotator cuff. Came back. This was the bad part. Did about 7 months of therapy, rehab, got back. First match back, tore it again. So it's like,
oh, wow.
Here we go. Yeah. And then ended up doing it a third time and tore my – it was just all – not off any bumps or anything. It was just a freak thing. Probably with me, too. I was in – I loved to lift, and I was into heavy powerlifting and probably didn't have a lot of flexibility. So I think that probably added on to then, you know, the movement in the ring and add on to the injuries. But you know, that's just the way it goes. I've seen guys, you know, give clotheslines to guys and tear their biceps, or, you know, guys just taking the wrong step in the ring and blowing their ACL. That's just, you know, just freak accidents that happen sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you're right. Definitely right about the freak act. Sure. Back 1990, incredible time to start. You were talking about high school gym and colleges and down point in professional wrestling. That definitely was one of them. I think it was still, you know, Hogan and you know, Hogan was still big, but he was kind of on his way out. Shawn Michaels, the Bret Hart, the Kurt Hennig, you know, those were kind of prominent names. Kurt Hennig was on his way out with injury at that time, but smaller names were starting to come. But it was still kind of a development stage as far as pro wrestling is concerned. What actually do you remember fondly as far as just the early 90s and 91, 92, 93, getting started in the business?
The thing that was me was, and wrestling back then was really kept secret. The locker room was, I mean, you didn't bring anybody into the locker room outside the business. So I didn't grow up a wrestling fan. I really didn't know much about wrestling. And so back then, especially, some of the older wrestlers didn't like that, but I didn't grow up in the business or know someone in the business. But you know, I mean, of course you knew Hulk Hogan cause that was a household name, Macho Man. I had heard those names and my uncle, was a huge wrestling fan. But there was a gentleman in this town where I live in, Danville, Illinois, and his brother used to be, of course, back then, Jobber, used to call him, extra. But after he retired from that, he got on driving semi, and then got his dad, got the brother. And I met him in the gym, and we got to talking. And after about a year, they had an opening for a driving position and ring crew. So that's how I ended up getting into the business. I was 20 at the time. And I was so my very first show was in Sioux City, Iowa. Never forget. I've never been around the business at all. So back then, they played the music on these little cassette tapes with a boom box, and you would plug a wire in that would go into the speaker system up at the arena. So here you'd play the music, then you have to take the wire out, rewind the tape, get it queued up again for whoever's going to go over at the end, and then put the wire back in. Well, sometimes you forget to take the wire out, so right in the middle of the match, you're queuing it up, and your music starts. So my first night was a disaster. I go in. The Beverly Brothers, you know the Beverly Brothers?
Oh, yeah.
They go in. They're prancing around the ring. And I've never seen them before. So, you know, they're in there for quite a while. No, of course, no one's telling me anything, so I shut their music off. Well, I guess they go up in the corner and they spread their tapes. And so Jack Lanza is the agent at the time, and he's old school. So he comes over and he's what the blank, 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 and he cracks me over the head with a clipboard. He always had a clipboard.
Oh, yikes.
I was like, are you kidding me? What just happened?
Yeah.
So in between, you know, once when the match started, I'd have to run down there and grab, you know, their jackets, robes, whatever they brought to the ring, and take it back to the locker room, and then get back in time to play the music for the end. Well, at that time, Ric Flair had gotten into WWF at the time, and I took his robe back, and I folded it up really nice, and it was a carpeted locker room, and I set it down by his bag. And after the show, first of all, I'm in there changing, which was a no-no. I should have been in the locker room because it was my first night, never been around. You know, it was such a tight-knit group. They didn't want someone to come in, leave the business, and then expose what the business is about before it came out as entertainment, you know. So,
because you're not a part of the fraternity, basically.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. So I'm sitting there and get dressed and Flair comes in, and he, did you put my robe down there? I'm like, yes, sir. And I'm all proud, you know, I folded up nice, and he just, one cuss word after another, this robe costs more and you'll make 10 years in this business. I mean, here I am, 20-year-old man, and I'm bawling, tears down my face, and all the boys are staring at me, and they throw me out of the locker room. It took 2 years for me to be able to dress in the locker room. So,
oh my goodness!
It was back then. It was hard to get yourself over with the boys and be part of that because it was a fraternity and they didn't want someone from the outside to leave and expose what all happens, you know. Because you know when they came out, and that was a hard adjustment when they came out. Say, hey, we're entertainment, we're, you know, blah, blah, blah. A lot of the old school guys hated it. They thought it's going to ruin the business, you know, it's going to go down the toilet. And it did just the opposite. Fan that really kind of didn't want to admit he was a wrestling fan because everybody would say, oh, it's fake, which is a word I totally hate. Now I could say, hey, it's entertainment, you know, it's like going to a movie. But so, you know, that time was very, you know, a learning experience for me. And I was on the road and grew up, you know, very quick and had to. But, you know, that Slayer and Bret Hart was the big angle going on there. And, man, I tell you, it was so long ago. Sometimes people will ask me questions and, or, you know, I've been off, man, you should write a book. I said, I can't remember what happened 3 years ago, let alone 20 years ago. You know, if I would have thought about it back then, like I did now, you know, every day I was on the road, I should have just wrote and had, because there's so many stories, a lot of stories that probably couldn't go in a book, but I mean, just so many things I got to experience, and it was a, man, I lived a life of five guys. I mean, I had a blessed career and was very lucky to do what I did and how I got in and the right place at the right time. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. That really is just to be that, you know, that third, you know, third leg in the ring, and you know, just put it all, the one who puts it all together, you know, the referee. During that time, toward the late 90s, we still had Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan around. They were on in the twilight of their tenure, being the Wrestling Challenge and Primetime Wrestling, all of those shows were kind of fading away. But you still caught the tail end of the Monsoon Heenan alliance, didn't you?
Yeah, I tell you, one of my first experience with Heenan was I did a what they call those conventions back then, NAFTA conventions or. You went and you promoted your show. They had booths set up in this big convention center. Well, this one was out in San Francisco. And the first time I met, we were out there. They had the crew guys driving. They rented us cars, Lincoln Town cars, and we had to pick the town up. And it was Mean Gene Okerlund and Bobby Heenan. And for 20 minutes from the airport to the, they just were nonstop, back and forth, one-liners, all over me, and these guys are crazy, but they were so witty, and yeah, Bobby Heenan was the best. And actually, I've been gone almost 4 years. About 2.5 years ago, I did an independent show up by Chicago. They called me up, asked if I wanted to come up there, which was a good time. It was good to get back in the ring, but Bobby Heenan was there signing autographs, and I went up to him, and it was such a joy to me. I hadn't seen him in years, and he remembered me, and because he was, you know, in very bad shape, but you know, gave him a hug and got to get a picture with him and see him. He had his wife with him, so it was a very good thing to be able to see him, and sad to hear of his passing. So, but
yeah.
Yeah, those guys, and Monsoon was, you know, of course, anybody knows in the wrestling, the position before we go out to the stage in the ring is called the gorilla position, and that was named after Gorilla Monsoon, who used to run that up there. He would tell you when you can go out, give you your cues, you know, everything's timing on television, and if you go over, cost of money, if you go too short, you go off, you know, you finish up a match before you go off the air. I mean, there, it's so precise, and he was a very intimidating gentleman, and you know, it was one of those, it ended up opening up my career, but when his son Joey Morella died in a car accident after we were leaving a show in Ocean City, Maryland, and it was just one of those nights we're all hugging each other and saying, be careful, because it was a very tired, that whole tour was just very exhausting, a lot of driving. And it was just before that, you had a weird feeling, because, I mean, everybody really was telling each other, be careful. I think they were, a lot of them were, he was driving back to Philly, and I actually was driving back to Illinois, so I had like a 12-hour drive. And and then, you know, of course, back then all I had was beepers, so my beeper is going off, and you know, to get that news was bad. And I think that was really a turning point for Gorilla Monsoon. So that sad time.
Yeah.
But I had a good ring. I had a good experience in the ring with Gorilla Monsoon when Bader first came in. And that, you know, he needed to get shoulder surgery, so they had to come up with a way to get him suspended. And he'd come out there, and I forget who he was whipping up on, but Jimmy Corderas came in. I think he headbutted Jimmy, threw him out. Then I come down. He ends up powerbombing me. Gorilla Monsoon comes down, suspended, and chops a few times. Then Gorilla checks on me in the corner, and Bader squashes both of us. So that was pretty neat to be in the ring with a legend like that and do that little spot.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your favorite WrestleMania that you've refereed?
WrestleMania 18 in Houston, I did Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle. And what was I really loved about that match was we were with Pat Patterson going over it, and Pat's like, you know, or those guys came up and they said, you know, what do you think about us starting out doing amateur moves? And Pat's like, oh, I love it, I love it. And then time they talked it out, they were like, and Pat was, man, he was, you know, persistent. No, you got to do this. Something the fans haven't seen. I'm telling you, they're going to eat it up. And they were kind of doubting themselves. And Pat's the one to actually end up pushing that to make them stay with, I think they did like 10 minutes of just amateur wrestling. And when they first did their probably 5 minutes and they both stood up, the crowd went crazy. And we kind of all just looked eye to eye at each other. And you could just tell that, okay, we got them. You know, they're with this. And then they did some more of it. Crowd goes crazy. And then they actually do one of the first wrestling moves, WWE moves, and then the crowd, you know, pops even louder. So it was a great build-up. Those guys were phenomenal athletes. I'm so glad to see Kurt Angle back in WWE. You know, I'm glad he's got his life straight. I wish he would have, you know, never have left, but, you know, he had personal things that he needed to get worked out. And but it's good to see him back and finishing up his career. And I hope to see him back in the ring. Even at his age, I think he could run circle around guys.
So, oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So
he is an animal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So you were around for three big eras in the WWE. You were around for the New Generation, which was, you know, kind of the tagline for the early 90s wave of stars. And you were around for, of course, the Attitude Era. And then you were around for Ruthless Aggression. And then really a fourth era, which really didn't have much of a name after Ruthless Aggression. It really was really the name. I know Triple H, you know, a few years ago called it the reality era, I believe. He said something about that. So technically you're around for four different eras, WWE. What was your favorite era in the WWE to referee and why?
Well, I'm a big, and I understand where they're at right now with stockholders, sponsors, and where they want the product. And obviously they know what they're doing because they're still on television. They're still selling a lot of merchandise and bunch. Mm-hmm. But I liked wrestling where the guys look like superheroes or built like superheroes. I like the edginess of it. You know, do I need to see, you know, one of the ladies with her butt hanging out or her boobs? No, I don't, you know, that not that part of it. But I like the reality of a guy being himself, you know, like a Stone Cold or a Rock. I think I liked it back then when, I don't know if you remember the show, everybody had an important part of the show. Every segment was good. You had, you know, I'll probably throw in a bunch of different theories, but I'm talking, you know, you had Rock doing his thing. You had Stone Cold doing his thing. You even Goldust and Booker, everybody on the show had a good segment. There was mm-hmm. never a segment that was almost basically a throwaway segment. Like, you know, I know they work hard on the show, but almost sometimes I watch and I go, well, that was just one. They wanted to kill 15 minutes, you know, on TV. And back then, the whole show was, to me, entertaining. And everybody had an important role in that show. It didn't matter if you were the champion, if you were a mid-card guy. There was an effort in making every – and maybe, to the part these guys had that it factor, all these guys. And, you know, don't get me wrong, talent-wise now with these guys, they do phenomenal stuff. They're great athletes. They're in shape. But as far as character-wise, watching the show, the characters back then, not even so much character, because character is kind of gimmicky to me, but the personalities back then were just, to me, bigger than life. And that's the part I miss. And maybe because these guys are limited in what they can do, you know, maybe that part is what kind of hurts them. Because I usually could tell how the business is going when I have my buddies call me and they're like, man, did you? And I'm like, they're tanking a little bit. And then I'll have the last pay-per-view. I didn't get to see. I had my buddies rave about the last pay-per-view. Said Cena and Reigns match was good. They enjoyed Brock and Brock. They said it was a really good put together show. So, but you know, getting back then, I just think the guys were cut loose, and it wasn't so scripted on their promos and stuff that, you know, it was so much. You know, you had guys just with personalities that were, like I said, bigger. Like even, you know, Edge, not a guy that was 6'4", 260 pounds, but his character and how he was portrayed, he fit right in with, you know, the rest of them, and Christian, and I don't know what the answer is, but, and I'm not knocking it because I'm not there. I love the business. I love the opportunity, and I want to see them, you know, ratings go through the roof, because I know Vince McMahon is the hardest worker I've ever been around. But I don't know right now what that is that's missing, but there's just something that's not there. And maybe it's going to be finding the next star or the next couple stars. Mm-hmm. But, you know, back then you just had, so many names. I mean, if you go back and think of the names, it was incredible. But I also think I've always been a big fan and try to explain to people, when you have WWF, WWE, or whatever, and we were going up against WCW, you needed that rivalry, and people were so interested in wrestling. It's like if you take the American League away from Major League Baseball and you just have National League teams, the World Series is not going to mean as much. It's not going to mean really anything.
Very
so
true.
They need, even for the wrestlers, for the boys, for retired wrestlers that are agents, you know, you want the business to succeed, other business to succeed, so they have somewhere to go, so they have a livelihood.
Yep.
And that's a big – when that was taken away, I think that really hurt more than, you know, it's like, yeah, we won the war, but – now, who's our competition? And there is,
right.
You know, and it's not, there's great talent in those, the Ring of Honor and TNA, which is now Impact, or with a Global Force.
Yeah,
great talent
in
there.
Between, yeah, Global TNA, Global
yeah,
Force,
you know, the,
Impact, yeah.
But
yeah.
But they're never going to be. To me personally, I don't think they'll ever be back on that. You're never going to have that level of ratings and excitement like we did back then. So it was just, you know, I think it's going in a cycle. It's like, you know, when rock and roll was hot, and then, you know, rap, hip hop was hot, and then country was huge for a while. And I think it's going to come back around. I really do. I think, you know, with NXT and the talent they're getting in there, and they're going to find there's going to be two or three stars that are really going to break out that I think is going to get that business generated again. I was glad to see AJ Styles come there. I remember watching him. I thought, man, this guy needs to be over at WWE.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was good to see him. I think that's the main thing is what you saw on TV was these guys. I mean, Stone Cold played a tough guy, and he was a tough guy, and he went out and did his promos on his own. He didn't have someone writing all this stuff for him.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, and same with, you know, Triple H and The Rock and Cena. They, you know, they're just
– Taker.
They're just so good at what they – you know, a complete wrestler, I try to explain, because, you know, you probably have heard from people, oh, I could go in there and do that. No, you can't. a complete wrestler is being an athlete, an entertainer, be able to cut promos, not hurting you yourself or somebody else, basically being a great stuntman. I mean, there's so much that goes into being a complete wrestler. People don't understand. You could be 6'6", 330 pounds, and just stink it up in the ring, you know, and
yeah.
People will – true wrestling fans will boo you out of the building. You know what I mean? So I know I'm kind of going off in all kinds of different directions. I don't get to talk it too much, so I'm kind of get a little excited to go back and think about things and relive. But I mean, man, there was just such a world of talent. You know, Benoit and Guerrero and Jericho and Booker, you know, and then Lex, I was never really a big wrestling fan, Lex, but he looked like $1 million. But the stages of going through the groups, you know, they had with DX and Nation of Domination, and man, they just really did. It's always a repeat cycle, and just do it a little different, but. You know, for the fans back then, it was the first time seeing these groups. They went through, and now when you reform them, you compare it to that stuff. You know, it's like, man, they're no DX or they're no, because they have to do it in a different way, and they can't be that borderline. You know, what I would like to see. You know, you don't have to go out there and cuss up a storm and be that type, but. I just like to let them, you know, turn it loose a little bit, you know. Like, back in the day, they used to say, you know, red means green. When you had blood, that meant more money. People, you know, and I kind of like that. That just me personally. It doesn't make it wrong or right for the next fan. But, you know, I liked it when we were geared towards an adult television show. But,
yeah,
you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we want to bring you back on, Jack, for part two so we can talk about the Undertaker, the invasion, the invasion era, the invasion angle. Does that sound like a plan?
Yeah, definitely. I kind of just went on a rattle there, but yeah, it was anytime. I'd love to talk. I love talking about the business. You know, I spent 22 years. If you could ever find out why I got let go, I'd appreciate it because I never got a straight answer, but stopped me for loving what I did. I love that company. They gave me a great living. 22 years, I have nothing, never have had anything bad to say about it. I never understood how guys leave and then bash it because, man, they gave you an opportunity of a lifetime. I've traveled the world. I've been in every country you can think of, and got paid well. They treated us. It was like gold. I lived the life of a rock star, and I love Vince. I love Shane, Stephanie, Hunter. They're genuinely good people, and they treat you right. They expect a lot out of you, but they also, you know, compensate you well. So,
yeah. Awesome. Wow, Jack.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your stories, man. We'll have you back on soon to go for part two. There's 22 years of stories in you, man, that we want to squeeze out of you.
All right, appreciate it. Appreciate the time. All right.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for former WWE referee Jack Doan on the show. 22 years of just so much packed into a man. I love those type of interviews, just so much in the business, so much experience. We got an action-packed show. We got Raw SmackDown review. We got No Mercy predictions. We got a whole bunch of headlines. Today we're going to be joined by editor-in-chief of Yes Wrestling, has his own podcast as well. Without further ado, the one, the only, Greg DeMarco. How are you today, sir? As he joined us, right, is coming in here soon. I know that, here we go, coming soon.
I'm here.
Here we go, Greg. How's it going, man?
Doing very well. You know, it's funny. You say the one and the only. That's just a factor of naming. There could be others. But I do appreciate that introduction, and I'm very excited to join you today. Honestly, I could sit back and listen to Jack Doan talk, though. He is amazing.
He is, you know,
great interview. And I'm looking forward to part two just as much as you are.
Yeah, man, I am too. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of WWE to talk about for sure. You're the one and only Greg DeMarco that I know, so you're special in my eyes, Greg.
Well, I will take that. I will take that to the bank.
Awesome. All right, without further ado, let's jump into some headlines. Oh, we got a doozy in Evansville. My guy, Lance Russell, man, Continental. I was a big fan of Continental as a kid, and even binge watched it on YouTube growing up. One of the greatest. I mean, he was such an inspiration to so many people. JR and Paul Heyman, you know, both tweeted about him. They were both very influential to both of them. Lance Russell, man, he was a legend in the business, and I believe he should be in the WWE Hall of Fame. Just such a pioneer in the pro wrestling announcing business.
Oh, I agree 100%. And Lance Russell, you know, as a kid growing up and watching products that you would kind of discover sometimes, you didn't even know they were on, like Continental and like some others, and you would always be shocked. And you got to know those personalities like Lance Russell, and then, of course, and he makes his way into other organizations like the NWA, and you have that familiar voice. And him, like so many others of that time, like the Bob Caudles and Gordon Solis, it was just this, it wasn't an authoritative voice, but it was this voice that you trusted. And they told you, kind of brought you up to speed. It was like, back then you were watching something that was happening, and wrestling was happening.
Yeah.
And they didn't assume you watched every week like the WWE may do. And the stories weren't told in video packages, they were told by these announcers. And they did so in a way, you know, standing at ringside before a match. I mean, it was just a completely different art form back then. But Lance Russell definitely deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. It's sad that, you know, sometimes posthumously is when a generation learns of a guy. I don't think a ton of the people out there that have started watching wrestling and that, you know, Attitude Era and beyond know that much of a Lance Russell. And so, you know, I'm excited when it opens up those eyes and people get to see them. But at the same time, like, this is, for me, being a little bit older than the average fan, part of my childhood. I mean, I love that, you know, those voices stood out for me. And when I whip up old things on the WWE Network, I love hearing those voices. And I'm not, you know, Gordon Soley guy who listens to the commentary now and says it sucks and says that Gordon Soley could do it better. But it's different now. It wasn't – you'd have to change the entire business for Gordon Soley to do it better. But those guys paved the way, and it just brings back memories. And memories are a good thing. You don't have to fast-forward them to now, but – it always does that, and much respect to him, and of course condolences to the family and friends. But it was, you know, a definite legend, and hopefully this does open up some more eyes and bring some exposure to a voice and a product, you know, and that people in catching Lance Russell's work also see a glimpse of the business back then, because it was very different.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And of course Gordon Soley. Oh, Holly Race with the belly-to-belly suplex. You know, it just the comment to me, I'm a traditionalist. I love old-school commentary. And just Lance Russell, I would love. He just held his his pieces of paper in his hand. And he would just talk about just the shows in Evansville, just the corner towns of the country. I loved it. It was absolutely amazing. Something just totally, different than Lance Russell passing away. WWE sending a cease and desist letter to the Young Bucks. Of course, they being the Elite, they've had that show on for quite some time now. With the Bullet Club, I've interviewed Adam Page before. He's a member of the Being the Elite as well. They had a very, very controversial particular video that was released that they quote unquote invaded Raw. They really kind of didn't. It was more of a we'll go to a nearby mall outside of a Hot Topic, but it caused a lot of controversy. Vince McMahon, it caught wind of Vince McMahon and Vince McMahon, letting on the too sweet sign. of course, cease and desist. But, the Young Bucks, in their witty fashion, they censored the too sweet signs and selling T-shirts. And I just saw a recent statistic that over the past few months, they've sold over 100,000 T-shirts at Hot Topic. So I don't think the too sweet sign is a big part of Bullet Club. It's a big part of the Young Bucks, but as far as merch is concerned, I don't think that they'll be losing much.
No, I think they're going to be just fine. And they've even said as much despite Nick's early reactions, but that's Nick for you. And I've had, been lucky enough to even interview the Young Bucks, thanks to Ring of Honor back in the day when they first came back. But the situation just kind of makes me laugh because everyone immediately does what internet wrestling fans do, and they run to the Young Bucks' defense. But the WWE, first and foremost, is doing what's fully within their legal right. And I hope that people understand that it is their intellectual property. They bought it. They own it. It was sold to them, through the prior owners, and that's, part of the contracts that are written the way they are today. And so they were fully within in their legal right to do it. Couple things, though. I love the fan reaction to the invasion because I've literally had people on Facebook telling me, no, they invaded. They were in the parking lot. And I'm like, they weren't in the parking lot. Like, people claiming to be there. It's so funny. Like, and I'm like, there's no way unless you were at the mall, there's no way you were there. But that's that fan support. They want to buy in. They want to be a part of something special. To me, part of it is, when you do this, we're going to invade, we're going to do that. I mean, you're riding a thin line anyway with the Bullet Club gimmick, only because there is so little originality to it. And when you're using other people's property, just receiving the blessing of a performer isn't enough in 2017. These things are bound by contracts and money, but to do an invasion of Raw when you're using their property kind of illegally, it's poking a dragon. I don't recommend doing it. And that's what they did. You kind of get what they asked for it, in my opinion. Like you do this invasion and you're trying to build your own brand off theirs. And look, it's worked for them. They're independently making money without being in the WWE and good for them. But why do something that might cause that kind of an issue? And an invasion, to me, like you should be smart enough to know that may not go your way in the end. And hopefully they learn that lesson. I love the cease and desist shirt. I think it was brilliant. It proves the creativity that they have. But for me, in the long run, if you're part of Bullet Club and you've got this brand and it's doing very well, it's probably the most successful group financially outside of the WWE ever in history. And when I talk about WWE, it includes everyone they bought, WCW and everything else. But these are creative individuals, and people kind of scoffed at that when I made that comment on Twitter when it all went down. These are very creative individuals, and the Young Bucks are very smart to the business. For me, now is the time to strike a different sort of feel to Bullet Club a little bit and come up with something that is your own that maybe you and your colleagues can even trademark and continue to make money off of because fans would follow it. It's not just that it's a parody and everything that they do. And even the Kingdom was trying to be like that for a while in Ring of Honor. And we saw how that worked out with the Four Horsemen signs and everything else they would do. I think I don't fault them for anything they've done in the past, but I think now turn that corner, make yourself special for a different reason, the people will follow, and that logo will still be seen everywhere. But to me, it was, you should have known better, and I hope you learned from it.
Certainly. Absolutely. Well said. I agree 100%. I'm just, there's not much originality in the Bullet Club, or Bullet Club, I should say.
It's so hard. I used to get ripped for that all the time for saying the Bullet Club, and now I'm used to just calling it Bullet Club. But it's just, we're so used to having the something. I still call it the Twitter and the Facebook. So it's you know.
Yeah, I'm actually cool with the PR guy from ROH, and he told me that. he and I talk occasionally, and. You know, he was telling me that he actually made that mistake too by saying "the," and they would correct that. It's Bullet Club, it's no "the," and very interesting stuff.
Just like it's not the WWE, it's just WWE.
Just WWE, yeah, exactly. not a lot of originality in Young Bucks, but like you said, their following is pretty cultish, and I don't think they're going to do much. I don't think there's anything that they can do to kind of wane away, you know, followers. So
I think that's
fine. Yeah. WWE interested in bringing back Caitlyn. She's been gone for almost 4 years. Wasn't a very, you know, huge hand in the Divas division. Former Divas champion, defeated Eve Torres, I think back in the first Raw of 2013, I believe it was.
I think you're right.
Not too much, you know, involvement. She wasn't a huge type of hand. Of course, we saw NXT with Maxine. What's her name now in Lucha Underground? I don't remember.
Katrina. Yeah, fantastic.
Katrina. Yeah. She manages, was it Mil Muertes or?
Yep.
Yes, Mil Muertes.
Yeah, Mil Muertes and the.
Yeah.
Their trio,
yeah.
Who is no longer a trio.
Right. So she's doing fantastic in Lucha Underground, but didn't have was one of the worst matches of the year against Caitlyn.
Yeah.
But you know, she honed her craft. She got a lot better. She won the Divas Championship. Of course, probably the most popular is when she was involved in the feud with AJ Lee. It adds depth to the division, and sometimes you can oversaturate a division. But I think in the women's division right now, I think it's at that number where another one or two people from the past wouldn't help. Asuka's coming to Raw, SmackDown maybe needs a little bit more depth, and I don't see anything wrong with it.
No, I don't see anything wrong with it either. It's funny. I read your news report on WrestleZone. Wonderfully done, as always. And it's funny when you read the comments about a potential Caitlyn return, and immediately people rush to the division's too big, Vince can't book women, all this kind of thing. And it takes me back to a novel concept that I don't think a lot of fans who follow the business online understand, and that's that not everybody on the roster is always going to be on television. You go to a house show, you're going to see people who are like, oh, I forgot about this person. You know, Bobby Roode didn't appear for several weeks. So that's just the way they build it. And that's how television works. Not everybody's going to be on television all the time. And it's what you've got to be two things. You've got to be relevant and ready at all times. Look at Mickie James. Mickie James was off television, wasn't in the No Mercy five way. Alexa plants the seeds during Raw talk. And then boom, Mickie comes out and shows them how it's done. On Raw, and now for the second week in a row, she is just killing it with her, you know, and now she's at the forefront on Raw, and some people are pushed to the background. And that happens to talent all the time. And you know, before the Miztourage, Axel and Bo Dallas weren't doing anything, but they were ready. And when they came out, you know, people knew who they were, and they remembered. And for Caitlyn, she got pretty good at the end there, and she definitely still has a following. And you know, unfortunately for her, became relevant more recently for negative reasons and things being leaked and everything else, but that's part of the culture of the world today, unfortunately. I would welcome seeing her back. I think there's a lot she can do. I don't want her to come out and cut a Mickie James I'm a Pioneer promo, because she wasn't the Pioneer by any stretch of the imagination.
No,
she did improve. But I would welcome seeing her back. I just, you know, to me, fans got to realize not everyone, there's ups and there's downs. Not everyone is in a prominent role every week, and absence makes a heart grow fonder, you know, and I think that it would open up some opportunities for people and give some people some time off. And I tell you, there's value in time off in wrestling. I mean, these people are beating the heck out of their bodies 4 days a week nowadays, the way they do the schedule. And so giving somebody some time off is a positive thing. I tell you, one person they could make really happy, put it on SmackDown, and you'll see Big E's face light up again, because they were always entertaining the heck together and enjoying enjoyable combination. So
true.
I think that, and I think she's single again. So there you go. You know, Big
there
E.
You
and,
go.
And look, if you ever want to break up the New Day, and I think you milk it for as long as you can before you do, you know, you could always, you know, look at that pairing and use it to help out Big E. But I'm for it. I'm 100% for it. I don't buy into the oversaturation of the division. That's just the way wrestling works. And everything is cyclical, and you got to be ready to go at a moment's notice. And I think that, you know, if she gets the opportunity, I hope she makes the most of it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I know you got to run. Let's talk one more headline real quick.
Of course.
Yeah, just real quick on Caitlyn. I think that's the biggest thing for I like, you know, Caitlyn coming back. For some reason, kind of like what they did with Mickie James, I would like to see Caitlyn in NXT. For some reason, I think that Caitlyn kind of spearheading Iconic and being the leader of Peyton Royce and oh goodness, what was the other one? Peyton
Billy
Royce
Kay.
and Billy Kay, yeah.
Billy Kay, yeah.
Kind of being the leader of Iconic. I think that would kind of add some depth to the women's division in NXT, especially since, you know, Asuka left. I think it would be, you know, an interesting idea.
I think so. I the only thing that I might caution you on with that suggestion is I don't know that Caitlyn can promo to the level of being like, sure, her promo skills might be below that of Billy Kay and Peyton Royce. So I'm not sure she can lead them from a promo standpoint. It'd be kind of like if all of a sudden, who's Eric Young's tag team partner in Insanity? I can't remember the guy's name now.
Completely
lost me on it. But
Wolf.
Yes. Alexander Wolf. If he suddenly, like, he did cut a promo and did okay, but he's not going to usurp Eric Young as a leader of Sanity. And I just can't see Caitlyn coming out and with the promo chops. Now it's been 4 years. Who knows what she's done from an acting perspective and how she's grown in that area. And maybe she can show up and surprise us. But I would have no problem with her having a run through NXT the way she did or the way she could, kind of like what, like you said, with what Mickie James did. Plus, it'll help her. She's working out. She's training. And it's a great opportunity for her to get that back. It's been 4 years. You don't want to just throw her back on television, especially when she wasn't a decorated veteran to begin with. So I think that
Absolutely.
Putting her in NXT can only benefit for her, too.
I agree, NXT. Lastly, before you run, your thoughts on the reports on why 205 Live is closing out consecutive Raws. According to Meltzer, he noted that after like the 10-15 and we see too, usually third hour numbers drop.
Right.
So because of those drops, WWE kind of pulled the plug on the interest of booking heavy stuff around that time. So they just kind of put on the 205 Live for filler. I think that's pretty interesting because last week we saw the celebration. This week we saw just the remarks of the celebration. So it makes sense of why they just kind of threw that. They're kind of just throwing that on there at the end. And like the bigger matches, like Braun and Rollins, and then Reigns and Miz. That's the, you know, that opened Braun and Rollins open, and then you know, Reigns and Miz close the second hour. So I can see how they just throw that on there for filler. But it's just it just keeps me wondering, why do they have a third hour?
Yeah, well, it's two different questions there, because the third hour is a money thing, and that's not going to go away because that's a USA Network thing and money and advertising. And I'm sure Vince would secretly love to get rid of the third hour. I don't know if I buy into the Meltzer report about why they put that in the third hour, because Vince does not want to throw in the towel, so to speak, and just give up on something like the last three segments of Raw. It's a convenient news report because it makes sense. And a lot of times those news reports, they make sense. It's like anybody could have put that together, and I don't know that I buy into that one so much. I think it's more speculative than anything. To me, though, I love the fact that they're getting this exposure in this spot. And, you know, I wrote an article last week that you can find on yeswrestling.com And a lot of people will hate me for it and disagree with me, but I think Enzo Amore is the best thing to happen to the Cruiserweight division because relevant again. And first of all, I will acknowledge the fact that if not for Neville, there may not have been a Cruiserweight division in 205 Live left for him to go to, because Neville has really carried that thing since he, you know, showed back up in December and January. But it's reignited the brand and reignited some interest in the brand, and it's changed Neville's character, the way that people are getting into. Now you got Kalisto. To me, it's what they needed. And people hate it because it's Enzo, but, you know, it's not – you're not supposed to like Enzo. And I know people who are online like, no, I don't like him because of how he's booked. And I'm like, I don't think people realize that Vince McMahon, Triple H, and everyone else, they understand how we think. And they use it against us. And people want to buy in this. They still think they're separate from the storylines when really they're bought in hook, line, and sinker. They don't even know it. And how they're using Enzo on everyone's kind of favorite, you know, favorite little brand that they put off to the side, it's perfect. It's brilliant booking on the WWE's part, and I love it. And putting him at the main event of Raw, or that main event position of Raw, to me shows that they're trying to make an effort to do something with this brand to make sure that it can be successful. In terms of the speculative news from Meltzer, I think we need to see a longer set of data to really know that for sure, to know if there's something there. But I love what they're doing. I think it's great. They built up so much heat with Enzo that it worked out perfectly when he joined the brand. And he's making people care more than they cared before. And that's his job, and he's doing it to perfection.
I agree. Yeah, like you said, we'll see. It is convenient, as you said. I mean, because it does seem like I said, that, you know, third hour numbers usually on the decline. You know, it does make sense that it could be filler. But I also agree that Enzo is, other than Neville and Austin Aries, Enzo is the best thing that has happened on 205 Live. Been a pleasure, Greg. Hope to.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely. Whatever you need. More than happy to come on. I appreciate the invite and had a lot of fun.
Yeah, plug your social media and your site before you go.
Of course, yep. Everybody can visit yeswrestling.com, yeswrestling.com. It's an opinionated website, although we do have a great reviewer and recapper and would love to get some more eyeballs and also know what people think. We welcome lots of different opinions, especially from our writers, and so definitely love to see that. And of course, you can follow that at Yes Pro Wrestling on the Twitter, and myself, Greg DeMarco 411 on Twitter as well. And just look for, actually, it's Greg DeMarco 411 on Facebook too. So always welcome the banter and the back and forth, and appreciate everybody who reads and talks and has a lot of fun with us.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Greg.
Thank you. You got it.
All right, thanks so much for Jack and Greg joining us. Greg is the guest co-host for this evening. Let's get back into the headlines. Why Jeff Hardy is not allowed to wear face paint anymore? Very interesting report that came out based on an interview that Jeff Hardy had in Comic-Con. He explained that he cannot wear face paint anymore on television because of Finn Balor. The very interesting stuff. Finn Balor, because of his demon character and because that character has kind of became its own entity recently. And so it's one of those things that I find it very interesting that they actually would ban Jeff Hardy to actually wear that face paint. That is startling to me that they would do that. I find that incredibly interesting, and it doesn't make sense to me for the most part, but at the same time, it's the WWE that we're talking about here. So it's one of those things that if they're really trying to put over Finn Balor, I can totally understand why they are just annihilating face paint altogether. It's quite clear that they want to put over Finn Balor. They want Finn Balor to be the next guy. I was explaining to someone, a friend of mine, kind of where they're going with Finn Balor. He still wants to be a part of they still look high on Finn Balor. They still have high hopes for him as far as just where he's going and his particular status
in the WWE echelon, I guess, if you will. But there's so many people that are kind of in that forefront now. We've seen Samoa Joe, we've seen Braun Strowman, we've seen Roman Reigns. So he's kind of, you know, lower in the pecking order right now as far as just the main event talent. It seems like they would have him kind of be a filler, opponent for Brock Lesnar. There's reports even saying that we can see that in Survivor Series. Lesnar wasn't scheduled for Survivor Series, but, you know, there's reports going out now as far as Lesnar being a part of SummerSlam. So it seems as if we might get him at SummerSlam. We may see Finn Balor and Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, but we'll get to Raw here in a minute. Now there's talking out now, you know, the sister Abigail, we'll talk about that here in a moment, but there's more Finn Balor versus Bray Wyatt, which I wanted to see it the first time because it seemed like it was an interesting feud. They kind of went away from it and did Wyatt and Rollins and then Balor and Elias, then kind of brought it back together, which didn't really make sense how they brought it back together. Now just extending it. SummerSlam saw the Demon come back, and then, of course, Man-to-Man, which is probably one of the worst gimmick concepts I've ever heard in my life. And I've been watching wrestling for quite some time, many decades, and virtually all my life. And I've seen some really bad gimmick matches. Man to Man is probably one of the worst gimmick matches I've ever seen, especially when Bray Wyatt said, you know, hey, man, you know, this is, I'm not a man, I'm a god. And you know, just kind of, and he's been saying that all the time, but he coins it as Man to Man. So it just, the whole thing was so convoluted, and it still is. The addition to Sister Abigail did bring some interest, and I'm okay with seeing that. It brings some interest as far as the feud is concerned. Adding that element, been so oversaturated, it's been so repetitive. And it's just bringing Sister Abigail in now, kind of, it's kind of bad timing. It's really kind of a desperate plea to extend, you know, the situation to extend the feud. And, you know, I'm not really interested in that. But I am interested in Sister Abigail. I guess we'll get to that as far as speculation of who Sister Abigail may be, and just in depth as far as where it might go. Ladies and gentlemen, like I have said before, Pancakes and Power Slams t-shirt, and of course right now on the Crave Wrestling Facebook Live, and Lou Keller, we got some comments as well. Got Andre saying, didn't get a chance to watch SmackDown Live. Happy birthday, Andre. Thank you for joining us in spite of being your birthday. That's very much appreciated. Anything big happened tonight, we will be talking about SmackDown Live, the go-home show to Norm Marcy. You see this right here, the Pancakes and Power Slams t-shirt. Please, if you will, if you're interested, we've had some messages. We've had some messages, so we're very thankful. Message the Crave Wrestling Facebook page for your interest in the Pancakes and Power Slams t-shirt. We love your support. We appreciate your support through viewership, through interaction, through sharing, through commenting, all that good stuff. Why don't you just, I would say buy a shirt the way that the NWO does, but I'm not going to do that because I don't want to be in any legal trouble. So I'll just simply buy a shirt. How about that? Pancakes and Power Slams t-shirt. Message us through the Crave Wrestling Facebook page, or you can mail cravewrestling@gmail.com. All right, yeah, so the face paint thing, very interesting. I think that, you know, he still wears it at live events. But, you know, we won't have to see much of that for the next, you know, quite some time, because he unfortunately went undergoing surgery, I believe today, for his shoulder. And I've heard torn labrum. I've heard torn rotator cuff. So I've heard a couple of things. Of course, we'll get the actual diagnosis. I'm sure WWE.com will report what the doctors saw and what the surgery is going to be and how the results of it is. Usually in those situations, it is a long time. It's usually, you know, shoulder injuries are usually around the 9 month, 6 to 9 month timeline. So it's unfortunate. It's very, very unfortunate, because that would make him miss. If he came back in 6 months, he'd come back right before Mania, because Mania is 6 months from now. And so he'd come back right before Mania, perhaps a surprise entrance in some type of ladder match or something like that. I'd be fine with that. Maybe, perhaps you can have Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy, somehow be something. Maybe Bray Wyatt attacks Matt Hardy. Maybe Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy at WrestleMania. Bray Wyatt kind of assists with waking up Matt Hardy, so to speak. That would be a very, very interesting one-on-one feud. And maybe Bray Wyatt attacks maybe Matt Hardy beats Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt attacks Matt Hardy at the end of the match, and then you get a Jeff Hardy run in return. There you go. That's my express booking of Jeff Hardy's return and Matt Hardy's woken character. How about that? Very interesting stuff. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the Raw and SmackDown review. We will be right back. All right, let's get to Raw. We were talking about Raw as far as 205 Live. Braun Strowman, Seth Rollins. For Strowman to beat Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, both tag team champions, I guess it makes Strowman look good. I think it's a way of protecting Strowman. And I think you can kind of do it, since Rollins and Ambrose are tag team champions, so they have the "I haven't been in singles matches" type of, you know, excuse. So I suppose you can do it, but defeating the tag team champions in consecutive weeks with kind of no build to it is just kind of odd to me, especially just defeating Seth Rollins, who, you know, former champion, with a single announcement, "I'm going to face Strowman next week." So, I think that could have been more build to it. I think that really could have been a good match, a good filler match, a good feud, closing out the year between Rollins and Strowman. Even if it wasn't necessarily for a tag team championship, or, which would be even better, if Strowman and Bray Wyatt, you know, reconciled and got back together and went for the tag team titles. I mean, why not? Bray Wyatt is in desperate need of some help right now, and I think that that would be quite ideal. And I think that since your boy Eric Rowan is out, I mean, since he's just kind of sitting around and doing nothing, there were talks about repackaging Rowan and Harper, which I hope does not happen. I really think that they dropped the ball substantially on Luke Harper being a babyface. I think that he was getting some really, really good pops when he was kind of feuding on SmackDown with Bray Wyatt while he was, you know, at the peak of his career during his championship era. I think they really dropped the ball on Luke Harper because they eventually, you know, he was in some title, you know, contentions. He was in some number one contention matches. And then they just kind of threw him in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Didn't even really last. You know, he wasn't like in the finals. You know, the finals were, I believe, Jinder Mahal and Mojo Rawley. So you see where Mojo Rawley is nowadays. And then, you know, end up working for Jinder Mahal. But, you know, that was just right place at the right time. So, you know, I think one of those things that I think that Luke Harper being alone on SmackDown would be wonderful. I would like to see, I would love to see a Luke Harper and Baron Corbin feud. You know, get AJ Styles away from the U.S. title. I think for the sake of namesake, it's helped the U.S. title, but to me, it hasn't done too much elevation of the U.S. title. The open challenges when John Cena had it, the feud between Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens was helpful. So those things were good. When he first won it, it was fantastic. It elevated it. And I think with having it, it makes it important. But I don't know. I think just I like AJ. With him being the U.S. champion, AJ Styles, you know, to get him away from the main event scene for now was a good idea. I just wish there were higher quality feuds with AJ Styles nowadays. I don't think that I like Baron Corbin, but I think just after the Money in the Bank cash-in failure and just, of course, today when he lost, you know, well, on SmackDown, he lost to Ty Dillinger right before, you know, a big match against AJ Styles. I think, you know, those are the things that you don't do to help build a star. And so, you know, I think Baron Corbin is a really good heel, but I don't think he's being properly hurts the title, his title contention, which hurts the title, you know, the level of the championship. So if I'm okay with AJ keeping it and having some high quality feuds, but you know, if the feuds aren't very high quality, you know, he can drop it. And I think that someone like a Luke Harper would benefit by being U.S. champion. What I would do, if you want to stretch this Shield thing that they're going to do, it looks like it's going to be The Miz and Sheamus and Cesaro, which is a much better trio than the Miztourage. Have the Shield beat them, and then why not, you know, have Rowan, you know, come back, join the Wyatt family, have a Bray Wyatt, Braun Strowman, and Eric Roman, you know, type of Wyatt family regime. You know, Braun Strowman's he's been feuded with Roman Reigns for the better part of a year. He's had some recent interaction with Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. So why not? Why not have Rowan, Harper, and Wyatt family versus the Shield? I think that would be an absolute fantastic Royal Rumble match or a December pay-per-view match between those, you know, six-man match. Last time the Shield and the Wyatt family feuded, they absolutely tore the house down the couple months where they feuded before Mania of last year, I think it was. So, right before Mania of, was it Mania 15? I think it was right before Mania 15 or maybe Mania 14. However long this Shield has been disbanded. Because you had the Authority angle, Sting came back in 14, I believe, because it was 14 because Rollins cashed in the Money in the Bank
15, didn't appear 16, and then Triple H this year. So it was 14 about 3.5 years ago when the Shield and the Wyatt family feuded. So, yeah, I think, you know, 3.5 years, over 3.5 years, I think it's about time to kind of, you know, rekindle that with a different variation of the Wyatt family. It'll help Bray Wyatt substantially because he needs all the help he possibly can. Rowan's got some really good steam going on. And, of course, it'll help Eric Rowan. So why not do it? Elias, you know, he's really good as a heel. I love the, you know, kind of rock style concerts that he has, you know, for every city. I think that's great. I think it's a good heat magnet. But, you know, what babyface are they saving him for? That's the big thing. He already feuded with Finn Balor. You know, he's feuding with Apollo Crews and Titus O'Neil right now, which doesn't do too much. So my question is just, I'm just wondering where he's going to feud with. Big fan of Mickie James having another opportunity. I would go all the way with it, to be honest with you. I think the nostalgia type of angle, I think when it's red hot, it works very well. Just like the Hardys came back, they got the nostalgia pop, and you know, for the first couple months, they were way over. Started to kind of die down once people were just kind of waiting for the Matt Hardy, you know, broken or woken or awoken, whatever you want to call him, a WWE character. I think the nostalgia run just kind of faded away and classified itself as obsolete. How about that? It just came right in the perfect timing. It was unrehearsed, and I think that was absolutely hilarious and perfect. Matter of fact, let's just, we'll do one of these.
I'll fade away and classify myself as obsolete.
that was time. So yeah, I think that's exactly what happened when the nostalgic, you know, Hardy's run. I like the Hardy still, but it just wasn't the same. The capitalization kind of, they didn't really kind of keep fueling the fire of the Hardys. They just kind of kept dousing it with sprinkles of water. And it just wasn't as potent as it was before. I think when you wake up Matt Hardy, I think it would be pretty good. Woken Matt Hardy and Elias would be a pretty good feud, actually. There's actually a couple heels, like, you know, like I said, with Elias and definitely Bray Wyatt come WrestleMania season would be good for Matt Hardy while he's away, while Jeff is away. I think with Mickie James right now is a perfect time. Royal Rumble's not until, you know, 3. Survivor Series is a major pay-per-view, but it's more of traditional tag teams, so you don't need to worry about a bunch of singles matches, you know, headlining the show. Royal Rumble is a good opportunity, and nowadays, you know, since it's towards the latter part of the year, December time, September, October, those are kind of months that aren't as popular as, you know, of course, the road to WrestleMania and, you know, the road to SummerSlam. So, you know, those are times where you can have, you know, a couple month runs from people like, you know, Mickie James and so forth. So I think, you know, she's starting to get over. You know, there was a time where she was just there and people just weren't giving her any reaction. Now she's getting over. So I think it's a very good idea to do it, and I would run with it. And then we talked about the third hour. Roman Reigns and Miz was a good showing. Roman Reigns is starting to get some more pops. How about that? I've noticed that with, you know, Denver. Denver is not necessarily known as a smarky crowd. You know, they had a double dose. It was at Raw and SmackDown were both in Denver. So, you know, it was really good to see, you know, Roman Reigns starting to get more, you know, pops. I think it's one of those things that people really don't have much of a reason to think of it because it's starting to look stupid. And Kalisto joining the Cruiserweight division is
long overdue. So I'm definitely a big advocate of that. As far as SmackDown's concerned, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura, they're just diluting him to no end. I just detest the fact that they're just doing what they're doing with Shinsuke Nakamura. It just makes me feel, it just upsets me. And I think it's a very bad idea. And it's just absolutely crazy to me. Too much talking. They kind of stopped the weekly appearances when they bring Jinder out. But Jinder Mahal doesn't help Shinsuke Nakamura. He doesn't help him become a bigger star. I mean, like, I've said this before, and Jinder Mahal looks like $1 million. I mean, if he was booked properly, he looks like a star. I've said it many times, and I will continue to say that. Jinder Mahal looks like a star. But the biggest problem with Jinder Mahal, and I've said this before, is that you can literally take everything about Jinder Mahal, the foreign heel character, the modern day Maharaja, the promo, the ring work. You can take every single element about Jinder Mahal and you can remove him and just dump it on someone else and it wouldn't be much of a difference. And that's my biggest thing. We were talking with Jack Doan, you know, in the show, and you know, he was talking about the Austins and the Foleys and the Takers and you know, and names like that that were so big in their day because it was an embodiment of, you know, kind of their character come to life, or just a kind of an exaggerated version of themselves. And so even if it wasn't an exaggerated version of themselves, they knew how to embody a character to make it seem, to make it, you know, their own, and make it like, hey, listen, if someone else did this character, it wouldn't be as near as when I did it. You know, this cannot be mimicked. This cannot be duplicated. And I think with Jinder Mahal, he's very apt to be duplicated. And that's the biggest, that is my biggest criticism of Jinder Mahal, is the fact that he can absolutely be duplicated. So, and it hurts the people who he feuds with as well, namely Shinsuke Nakamura, who's trying to get that type of credibility in the WWE. The women's match was decent. I don't see how I don't like, you know, they made Charlotte Flair tap. Even if she wins the women's championship, I think that's a bad idea to make her tap right before she wins. That loses the strength of. Understand why they do that. It makes absolutely no sense to me. Bobby Roode and Mike Kanellis, congratulations on Kanellis and Maria. Maria Kanellis and Mike Bennett. Maria Kanellis Bennett and Mike Bennett, I should say, expecting their first child. But unfortunately for Mike Kanellis, he is becoming a glorified enhancement talent, unfortunately. Usos and New Day, that match is going to be absolutely phenomenal. I'm really looking forward to that. Probably the match of the night. And just the Shane McMahon and developing decent. And then Orton, which I don't necessarily care about, but, you know, it could be worse, I guess you could say. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the flavor of the week without further ado. We're going to talk about No Mercy, just a simple grade for the sake of time, just a simple grade of Judgment Day 2002 and Armageddon 2000. So we'll be right back for the week.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
Armageddon 2000. We've talked about Armageddon 2000 before here on the show years ago. Just a quick grade for Armageddon 2000. I'm doing Hell in a Cell pay per views as far as reviewing and grading. Armageddon 2000. to me was I think that was probably one of my favorite, one of my top three favorite Hell in a Cell matches, just because it was the concept has never happened before, and it hasn't happened again. That was 17 years ago. Wow, 17 years ago. I had Rikishi on the show earlier this year to talk about it. And yeah, it was really interesting to see that. I give it a B plus for that pay-per-view altogether. It wasn't a lot of huge undercard matches because all the main eventers were in, you know, the Armageddon Hell in a Cell match, but I love the concept. And then Judgment Day 2002, I give that a B as well. I think that was a decent pay-per-view. I wasn't a fan of Chris Jericho and Triple H, and then, you know, Triple H, you know, winning, you know, the Hell in a Cell and the pedigree on top of the cage. That didn't make sense to me at all. It was decent. It was a decent, you know, pay-per-view altogether. So I would say I'd give it a B pay-per-view. I guess I can say as far as the matches are concerned, for Judgment Day 2002, you had Eddie Guerrero defeating RVD for the IC Championship to retain it. That was a good match. Trish with Bubba defeating Stacy with Reverend Devon. The Reverend Devon just called my name, make funny, absolutely funny stuff. And then, of course, you had Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman defeating the Hardy Boys. Paul Heyman, that was very interesting. And then you had Austin defeating the Big Show and Ric Flair in a handicap match. Very odd. Edge defeating Angle in hair versus hair match. Of course, we remember that. Of course, like I said, Triple H defeating Chris Jericho and LaSalle, which didn't even main event. Rikishi and Rico defeated Billy and Chuck for the championships in very short fashion. And then Taker defeated Hogan to win the Undisputed Championship. So, you know, like I said, B pay-per-view. I give it a B. Not terrible, but, you know. It wasn't nothing elaborate, of course. All right, let's get to we have predictions coming up for this coming Hell in a Cell. So we will get to the Hell in a Cell predictions here. Decent build as far as the build up for it and the anticipation. I think that the both of the Hell in a Cell matches are I'm really looking forward to the Usos and we're looking forward to the Usos and New Day and as well as Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens. I think both of them are going to be fantastic matches. As far as the matches are concerned, I got Orton going over. Bobby Roode going over Dolph Ziggler. I got Styles. Charlotte winning SmackDown Women's Championship. I got the New Day retaining. I got Jinder Mahal retaining some type of wicked, you know, some type of crazy, some type of, you know, with the Singh brother. And Shane beating Kevin Owens. So, of course, Gable and Benjamin, Hype Bros. I think this is when the Hype Bros turn their backs. So, I think maybe the official Zack Ryder heel turn. So, we'll see. That is, but God bless you all. Enjoy Hell in a Cell. This is Chris Featherstone. Follow at Crave Wrestling on Twitter and Facebook. Until next week, enjoy your week of wrestling. God bless you.